Moncrief on News Talk.
A good bedside manner, a degree of human warmth, is of course an important quality in a doctor, but that's tricky to teach. Nonetheless, in Trinity College from next year, the ability to love, as they're phrasing it, will be made a graduate outcome for medical students. Brendan O'Shea is a Kildare GP and Assistant Adjunct Professor in General Practice in Trinity. Brendan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Because I suppose it must be a difficulty in that a lot of medical training is about, you know, this specific ailment or this specific part of the body that has to be treated. But at the same time, you also have to think about there's a human being in front of you while you're trying to solve that problem.
It's not easy. This week, as we speak, the final year medical students are being evaluated and examined at the end of their 5-year course of studies. So a medical degree is 4, 5 or 6 years, depending on which college you take it. It's a really busy curriculum. There are a huge amount of exciting things happening. Once something gets into the curriculum, it's very difficult to take it out. So there's huge competition. And I think there's a concern, really, that in all this competition of the last decades and the scientific side of medicine, we really have a concern regarding the humanistic side of it. And hence this really challenging paper by Colm O'Doherty and Claire Donoghue in the Journal of Medical Education and Curricular Development. We need to teach love.
Yeah,
it doesn't sound like a great place to be at. Has it come to this? But I think there's a very honest imperative behind it. Should love be explicitly stated as a core concept in the medical curriculum?
How do you teach love, though?
Well, I think there are actually a whole lot of ways, and the evidence would suggest that. So within that curriculum, you can direct and you can draw on the other disciplines. So if we're not careful, the whole curriculum can be exclusively science-based. You can encourage and require and request people to go back and read some of the great literature, to critically watch some of the great movies with great stories in them, to dip into art. So you can go about it that way, by reaching into the artistic disciplines again. And we have been guilty of turning our back on them, I think. So that's a simple, straightforward way to do it.
Yeah.
Another old-fashioned way to do it is direct observation of practice. And in practical terms, what this means is it means observing students, engaging with people who are attending for care, but doing so with that perspective, not just the perspective, well, how good is the student at managing the diabetes or the heart disease or the anxiety or depression, but what's the quality of their interaction? How do they get on? How do they engage with people? Their non-verbal communication skills, and to look for that quality of interest, of empathy, of generosity, an engagement that's actually truly respectful, not just ticking the boxes and getting the bare minimum done.
Now, but if there isn't empathy there, now obviously that's not very pleasant for the patient. Can it do medical damage?
There's no doubt that it can, and very simplistically but correctly, if an individual has confidence in the doctor that they're engaged with, they're significantly more likely to follow that doctor's advice. And then conversely, if the engagement with the doctor creates negative, unpleasant feelings, and I'm afraid we know that that happens to a significant extent, then it's significantly more likely that the individual is likely to default from the plan management or the care. Now, that's going back to a value-driven and imperative, and we've got to get people to take the pills and do the investigations. But that is a real thing that's been scientifically measured. Another important angle on it is how do the two individuals in the consultation feel about the thing? And again, we have a concern. Our medical students work extremely hard. It is a big curriculum. Junior hospital doctors are extremely hardworking individuals, and there's a feeling or a concern that if we don't have this broader empathetic influence in what they're doing, they can fall out of love with patients, fall out of love with themselves and their career, and that has terrible consequences, especially for patients as well as the doctors.
Also, I mean, your junior hospital doctor, as you said, works extremely hard. It's a very pressurized job. And would it be fair to say the system itself makes it more difficult to spend that little bit of extra time being empathetic to a patient rather than putting pressure on them to get on to the next case?
Well, I think most of us feel that there's actually no time in medicine anymore. And, you know, so that goes down the route of aging population, vast volumes of work, care is more complex. So we're constantly time scarce. And that is part of it. Another part of it relates to what kind of doctor are we talking about? And arguably, any doctor that has a face-to-face engagement with patients, it would be highly desirable that this issue is addressed, that empathy is real and alive, that respect and a feeling of social justice and listening are all evident in the consultation. But arguably, maybe if you're a pathologist or a radiologist, or if you're in a very subspecialized discipline, maybe that's less important. Those of us in general practice are of the view that the personal engagement over years and decades is actually really at the core of what we do. So not all doctors are the same. But there are reasons why love has been squeezed out. There are real reasons. We would congratulate Claire Donoghue and co for drafting this challenge into an eminent journal of medical education.
Yeah, what are the real reasons it's been squeezed out?
Time constraints, a very large amount of empirical knowledge that you need to have at your fingertips if you're going to be a safe doctor. The demands of the health system once you get qualified. The pressure to move patient care along, to get the tests done, to get the treatments administered, to organise the management plans. And the fact that medicine really is a 24/365 concern, that it's a 24-hour process, that long hours of duty are part of the package. These are all the things that arguably innocently drive it out. And then another aspect of it is the impact of the medical curriculum and the medical process on the doctors and the students. They are hardworking, they are bright, they are put into a very competitive career pathway, would be a perspective. Mm-hmm. And that competitiveness and that scientific brilliance often doesn't sit very comfortably with a holistic concept of love and how complicated that love is and how important that it is. You know, these scientific doctors, they could reasonably turn around and say, my God, you want us to do everything. But in practical terms, Colin Doherty and Claire Donoghue are clearly stating that the pendulum has swung too far in the scientific to the scientific end of the spectrum. We need to bring it back.
Yeah. Within the system as it is now, whether that be in hospitals or in GP practices, is empathy monitored at all?
Very indirectly. And I suppose the honest answer to your question is it isn't. Very indirectly, there is a complaint system in place for when care is inadequate. There is a system of governance that's regulated by the Medical Council. Now, the Medical Council wouldn't be regarded as a major propagator of love. But certainly, if there are physicians who are underperforming, often this emerges as poor communication, and that dearth of respect and empathy can sometimes be picked up and addressed at that level. But that's kind of a cagey, indirect answer to your very good question, really. And the honest answer to that is that love isn't monitored. In general practice, for example, it's possible for people, look, I don't like her, I don't like him, I'll go to the other person in the office next door. So patients do have some choice of doctor in general practice. But in the acute medical system, where your liver cancer brings you into a hepatology unit, you don't really have that choice. So answering your very good question, love and empathy aren't probably effectively measured or monitored.
Yeah. Though, as you say, like a lot of these doctors are under enormous amounts of pressure, have to be retaining huge amounts of knowledge and be aware of all sorts of other factors apart from just the treatment in itself. Is it good enough to just have a pretty good way of faking it rather than you actually have to mean it?
That's a really hard question. My gut instinct, which is a highly unreliable entity, is that's not good enough. And it's not good enough for you. And I think if you go through your life and your career that you're very committed to and you're faking a large part of it, that to me is a pathway to burnout and cynicism.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we've all had fantastic tutors along the way, and I could certainly point to three or four of my own who were particularly gifted in the manner of their communication, the way they engaged with people. Professor James McCormick in Trinity, Professor Donald Weir, so it can be passed on. It can be passed on in that way, and if you can bring that and if you can keep it alive, it really adds to your resilience as a physician.
So I think
Claire Donoghue and Colin Doherty have done us a great job by throwing down the gauntlet on this, and they're saying they're going ahead and we are going to bring love into the curriculum next year. I think it's very important to understand what people feel about this. How do they feel as passive recipients of the care that's being provided in our imperfect system?
There's a fair amount of comments in front of me now, Brendan, since we started talking, and a lot of the experiences aren't good, but unfortunately, that there is a kind of a theme, though, and maybe this is an historical factor, that when people, or at least the people who've been texting in, when they deal with consultants, they often come across a degree of arrogance there. And perhaps is that a result of a kind of a historical system where the consultant was put somewhat on a pedestal by the system?
I don't know, but I do know that I know on the general practice side of things, we do recognise that communication and engagement and holistic care is foundational to what we do. We do regard that we're in long-term relationships with people and households and families. And we do place a lot of emphasis on communication skills training. That's not the same as love, but it's in the space next door. Certainly when I was involved with GP training, we certainly took them to art galleries and we certainly prescribed movies, novels, and took that broader approach. Hospital-based medicine is significantly different. It is arguably much more transactional, that there is a greater distance. Very often you will have a consultant, but then you will have a registrar, an SHO, and three interns and a bigger team, and they are engaged in procedural medicine. They're doing a stream of colonoscopies or OGDs. Mm-hmm. It's a much more arguably, if you like, scientific, if scientific is the right word, environment. So there are reasons why we have maybe evolved along these different lines. But at the end of the day, certainly I would understand that a lot of my consultant colleagues, particularly working in large public hospitals, in my view, probably don't have the same level of control over their work environment and are under a different set of pressures. And almost certainly that may have a bearing. I think a lot of public consultants work incredibly hard to work a system that's far from perfect. It's stressful, it's difficult, and at times physicians do become burnt out, and that can easily translate into cynical behaviour that's perceived as arrogant and hurtful by people. And we really don't like that. It's very, very difficult. It's unfair and wrong for the individual who's there for medical care, and ultimately it becomes very destructive for the physician or the nursing colleague who's engaged in this.
Brendan, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Brendan O'Shea there. Brendan is a Kildare GP and Assistant Adjunct Professor in General Practice in Trinity College. A lot of comments on that have come in. I had to message in when I heard this discussion on the bedside manner of doctors. My mum's doctor is a highly strong and probably overworked GP. My mother's last meeting with her GP was a house call. Due to time limitations, her visit was very rushed. There was no empathy whatsoever given, and she spoke down to my mother. My mother was taken into hospital days later and passed away within a week. My poor mother was so upset after the doctor left at how she was spoken to. Heartbreaking. Some people are perhaps not meant to be doctors. Well, perhaps that could well be the case. You know, you get a gazillion points near leaving cert and, oh, medicine. Though another texter says, as a GP, I feel absolutely like time pressure and overwhelming busyness stops me having the time to be as empathetic as I'd like. You can teach it, but we have to allow it to be done in real life. And that's as a GP. And I would imagine, as Brendan seemed to be implying there, in GP practices, there's probably a little bit more room to have a one-to-one relationship with patients who you may be seeing regularly over a period of years. Someone else says, I'm now 46 and have been a patient since I was 3 years old. My experiences of healthcare are so varied, and I have my own list of good consultants and teams, are those who care and a list of the rubbish ones. I would hope no human has the misfortune to meet people who have no empathy. The impact of seeing good ones is so important in recovery. The poor ones, I just dread going to see. This is so, so important, as we the patient, should be at the centre, not the ego of the doctor. Another texter says, things will absolutely get missed if you feel rushed or spoken down to. Love isn't the right word, but empathy definitely has a place in hospitals and GP surgeries. Somebody else thinks this is a great idea. My GP should be in any other job because he's so unempathetic and dismissive. And I put off going to him. And that's a knock-on effect of that. That people will say, you know, I have a bit of a twinge. And of course, that twinge might be something more serious, but they don't go into the doctor because they don't exactly relish that experience. After spending the last month in hospital, nurses could do well with learning about love and improving bedside manner. Indeed, many could do with improving their communication also. Someone else says, I think years of dealing with serious illnesses could be making doctors a bit jaded and lose sight of each individual behind a diagnosis, however harsh. They should have to do some top-up courses. In my experience, many consultants and GPs can be so dismissive and cold, leaving people sometimes intimidated. And finally, somebody else says, it's all well and good to want a good bedside manner, but you want them to know they are at medically, first and foremost. God, well, you'd hope for that as a basic requirement of it.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.